Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And I'm Rachel Jacobs.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermented.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. It is our 1 month and 1 day anniversary of being open as Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. Things are still going strong. We had a really cute, amazing dog costume competition of the other day. It was a battle to the death. There were five judges and four dogs.
So
they were all very cute. The judges were cuter than the dogs, I think. We had some young local LICers. They were all Jamaican. No.
What?
That's a reggae song. That's a reggae thing. All reggae nights, they use the horn a lot. Anyway. Announcements. Other announcements. That was yesterday. What's happening tomorrow?
I got nothing for tomorrow, but...
I mean like tomorrow, the proverbial tomorrow, using the parlance of our time.
I know. Okay, let's see if I can get my brain straight. All right, next Wednesday, November 8th, is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh my God.
But before that, on November 5th, the New York City Marathon, so good luck to all the runners. November 8th, go ahead.
And before that, November 7th, don't forget to vote.
Vote.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in New York City. I mean, it's important everywhere, but especially in New York City, we are electing, this is mayoral elections time, as well as a couple of other things. So look out for what we're voting on. Make sure you get the facts and vote. Vote your brains out. Do it.
Yeah.
And then next Wednesday, after you vote.
Are you ready? Do you finally have the info you're talking
about? I do. The New York City Brewers Guild and the New York State Brewers Association are hosting the first NYC Brewed Fall Brewery Crawl. It's going to be in Long Island City at Fifth Hammer, Rockaway, Big Alice, and LIC Beer Project. It's $20 for a ticket. You can find the event on Eventbrite. Basically, your $20 will get you a wristband and a punch card at the first brewery you check into. That will get you a taster at each brewery, as well as access to a special Meet the Brewer area where you will get samples of a bunch of other New York City brewers, including Keg and Lantern, KCBC, Five Boroughs, and like, I don't know, 9 or 10 more.
So it's basically like a New York City New York City brewery beer crawl within a one-mile radius walking thing. So
you'll
pretty much hosting, each individual brewery is hosting other breweries of New York City. And it's just a nice roll around, and it benefits this New York State Brewers Association and the New York City Brewers Guild.
Yep,
very cool. And you still have a week and a half, two and a half weeks to get those ferments ready for Ferment, which is an annual fermentation potluck hosted by our friend Zachary Shulman. Cheryl Passwater also has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So this year, it is November 18th, Saturday, from 1 to 4 p.m. at Mayday Space in Brooklyn. So get those ferments ready. That's enough time to make a mead, to make a cider, to make some yogurt, some cheese. Some pickles, a very fast beer. one of Mary's speed brews. Two Mary's speed brews. So definitely check that out. There's more information at Ferment on Facebook or fermentferment.wordpress.com.
And last but not least, national news, the Brewers Association, which is the not-for-profit trade association dedicated to small and independent American brewers, announced an agreement today with the USDA, it's actually the USDA ARS, United States Department of Agriculture, Agricultural Research Service, to fund public hop breeding for the purpose of developing and releasing disease-resistant aroma hop cultivars into the public domain in support of hop growing efforts throughout the U.S. That's pretty cool. They're going to focus their research in four areas: sensory requirements, as determined by the BA through a collaborative and participatory brewery and industry stakeholder program; improved downy mildew resistance; improved powdery mildew resistance; and improved agronomic performance. So hopefully we'll see some new hop varieties come out of this program.
And longevity within them. I'm glad about that. Very excited about that. I'm having fun diving into this hop game even more and more and more. But today, not to be cheesy, but let's get cheesy. Oh, all right, I'll just dive right into that. We are
Rachel, we should have expected. We knew something like that was coming.
Yes. I am very excited to announce today's guest. We met through a Beery Avenue, but the history is rich. Cheese is rich. Andy Marcelli of Marcelli Formaggio. How you doing?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your beer life and what Marcelli Formaggio is. Started the beer life, because that's when we met.
Okay.
How did we meet through that?
So I started working at Eataly. Now I have to say Eataly Flatiron, because there's more than one in New York City. Mm-hmm. Can't just say Eataly New York anymore. Right before, a couple months before it opened in the end of the summer of 2010. And, you know, after doing a couple of things like local, you know, product sourcing, got into beer and eventually started working with the beer program and got to do lots of fun events through that in the early years there, and then obviously started making my way around, you know, New York City to get to know who was in the New York City beer scene, and you guys were everywhere.
So that was a chapter that is after your family is in the cheese business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you grow up around cheese?
No, actually. Well, I grew up in food. My dad is a chef. My brother and sister are both chefs. We grew up in the food world, as a food family. And, about 15 years ago, my dad and, you know, his extended family went over to Italy to see where, like, his grandparents came from, this little village in Anversa, about an hour and a half east of Rome in the region of Abruzzo. And they just fell in love with the place. I wasn't actually on that trip. I was, you know, working my kind of first out of college job. Mm-hmm. And he just called me from there. I think I was in California for the summer, and just, you know, was going on and on about how wonderful and beautiful the place was, how great our family was, how great their cheeses were, and that he wanted to, you know, do something to keep, you know, with them, for them. And so, you know, he said he wanted to figure out how to bring the cheese to the United States. And a couple years after, you know, he said that, my parents had been going over there every few months just to hang out and check in with the family and see how everything was going. And then in, I guess 2007, he said that they were ready, and he asked me if I could give him a year to help him figure it out. And because I was looking for, you know, making a change in my life professionally, and 10 years later, we're still at it.
That's awesome.
We're in our, I guess, yeah, right now it's our 10-year anniversary of starting the company. We actually, you know, started importing and selling the cheese in the summer of 2008. But 10 years ago, he and I got on a plane and went over to Italy, went to this really cool cheese festival that actually just happened in September. Again, it's every 2 years. It's called Slow Food Cheese in the region of Piedmont in northern Italy, about 8 hours north of Abruzzo. So we go up there usually every 2 years to go to that, you know, that event, because it's a big Italian cheese festival. But now there's cheeses from, you know, kind of all over the world, in Europe, and the U.S. has a good presence there, too. So That was an interesting trip, just getting, like, jumping right in. And I spent about 4 months after that festival in Abruzzo on the farm, mm-hmm. learning how they made their cheese, learning how to take care of it, and also trying to figure out how to get it to the U.S., because that really wasn't easy. We were, you know, calling shipping companies, and they're like, oh, cheese? No, we don't ship cheese. We're like, okay, so it's got to get there somehow. So, we started that together, and after 3 years, you know, I was like, I realized that food is really, you know, obviously I grew up in it, but I wasn't really sure that's what I wanted to do, you know, to work in that world. And after the first 3 years of Marcelli Formaggi, it was just so much fun. I was like, I need to do something to kind of accelerate my knowledge. And so the Eataly project was coming up. And the original goal was, you know, to sell our cheese there. And then, you know, I just had an idea. I was like, well, they're hiring now, so why don't I, you know, get a job there? And I ended up working there for 6 years, and it was a lot of fun.
Quite an adventure.
Yeah. So about a year and a half ago, I left to return to Marcelli Formaggi, and, you know, we're growing. We're about 7 people now. It's my mom, my dad, my sister, and I, and we've got, you know, 3 awesome people that help us do our day-to-day stuff.
Let's go back a little bit to the farm and what, you know, what was it like on the farm and learning how to make cheese, and what is the general traditional approach that your family is making?
Yeah, well, so the story with the farm is it was started about 40 years ago by my cousin Nunzio. He was going to school in Rome. He's about my dad's age. He went to school in Rome and studied economics and wrote a thesis project on supporting local economy through shepherding and working with sheep. And we always joke that his, you know, thesis argument must have been so strong that he convinced himself to actually do it. So, he's, you know, he and his family, you know, they're amazing. They basically carved this farm out of the side of a mountain above the village of Inversa, which has about, I guess, maybe it's 300 people that live there. It used to be thousands. It's one of those beautiful villages in Italy that, you know, used to have a higher occupation, but, you know, decades and decades and decades ago, you know, people started leaving for kind of like the bigger cities. But they're one of those places that, just like, you know, here in the summertime, you know, most people that live in New York City leave to go to like kind of the more, you know, rural areas or, you know, coastal areas. Same thing there. So they're a very popular stop because they're an agriturismo, which means you can stay on the farm. They have lodging. They have a restaurant. So it's been really great. Getting to know their operation, obviously, but now like his, you know, Nunzio's children are kind of doing a lot of the day to day stuff, and they're around, you know, my age and my sister's age. So it's actually kind of consistent through all the different producers we work with. Most of them have, like, the next generation is involved and wants to keep going, so we're all going to kind of keep going, you know, and growing.
Mm-hmm. So you're bringing in not only your family's cheese, but other Italian cheeses as well.
Exactly. So their farm has about 1,200 sheep. The breed is called Sopraffazzana, which is a indigenous breed to the region of Abruzzo and I think Tuscany as well. And they're very unique sheep because they yield even less milk than regular sheep do. Mm-hmm. So what you get is really rich. You really can taste almost everything that they've been eating. So it's a very pristine area. Abruzzo is known as the green heart of Europe, as it has I think more national parkland per capita or square mile, whatever, than anywhere else in Europe. So the sheep have a wonderful life in a beautiful place. And then they also have about 300 goats, so they make goat cheese as well. But the other producers make some goat sheep smoked cheeses and goat smoked cheeses that we import. But everything is made with raw milk.
Awesome.
Now, I'm actually interested in how you did manage to get it over, because I know that not only is, like, shipping cheese from Italy is probably a problem, but the USDA and the FDA are notoriously annoying with the raw milk and raw milk cheeses.
Right.
Yep. So how did you overcome that?
Well, you know, we follow the rules and we pay attention to what the regulations are. That's actually one thing that we've spent most of the last year on is there's new things coming. Like it's the Food Safety Modernization Act, where they're trying to get all small producers and large producers to kind of adhere to the same guidelines. But yeah, it's been challenging to pay attention. Thankfully, the cheese community is educating themselves and trying to educate the consumers as well. Like, there was a problem, I think maybe a year or two ago, where the FDA, you know, started targeting aging on wood and tried to, I guess, you know, put things in motion to get rid of it. And the industry really, you know, reacted to try and educate them that, you know, that's not necessarily the problem. Just like, you know, raw milk cheese isn't always necessarily the problem. It's, you know, you need to have proper sanitation. And so that's something we've been working really hard on, you know, to fully you know, have everything in line. And, you know, it's great. We can go over, like, we've made a couple trips in the last 6 months. My parents did, and my sister and I were just over there. And, you know, we talked to our cousin, and it's like, okay, well, here's, you know, the last 10 years worth of lab results, and here's our HACCP plan, and here, you know, so it's all about really about, you know, education. So.
And raw milk cheese can be brought in or produced in this country, but it has to be aged, correct?
For 60 days.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's, you know, very similar to why, you know, we're all making, you know, of course, I'm sure there's many of the things you talk about in this show, but, you know, like probiotics and things that have good bacteria part of your diet because it's good for you. Well, you know, raw milk cheese does have that because it's only pasteurized. The milk's heated up enough that, you know, a lot of the good bacteria is still remaining. So, so it's done at a lower temperature than pasteurized cheeses. And then the time helps a lot of those bad bacteria become dormant. So you're just left with good, you know, healthy bacteria, good things that are good for you.
Although raw milk cheeses younger than 60 days are certainly allowed in other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So.
Yep.
Well, let's.
Speaking of dormant, we're going to let the show go dormant for about a couple seconds. Please listen to the word from our sponsor. Thank you very much. From MedRat.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are here in the studio, blessed with the presence of Andy Marcelli of Marcelli Formaggi. Thank you again for joining us. We were just talking about a lot of cheesy stuff, but your company is expanding a little bit and doing and importing some other things from.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, we started with cheese and really only imported a few cheeses. We have about 14 now. Maybe we started with like 5 or 6 or 7 in the beginning and kind of just wanted to see if this was going to work or not. And then the next thing we thought of was because we brag so much about what the sheep are eating, like these 100 different wild herbs and flowers that are growing, you know, through the mountain and through the valley, that, you know, everything that they're eating. Well, that's not possible without, you know, without bees. And so there's amazing honey, mountain honey produced in Abruzzo. So that was the next thing we brought in. And then we started to look for, you know, dry pasta and olive oil, and so now we have that as well as you know, olive oil and olive oil products. We have olive wood now.
Olive wood.
Yep. So you know, so we have your cheese boards to make your, you know, your cheese arrangement with some accompaniments, and now we've also gotten into gluten-free products too, because we really love the pasta producer that we work with. They've been around for 150 years. It's a really small company. It's right now it's grandpa, grandma, you know, son, wife, and very some young daughters. So we were trying to find a gluten-free pasta that was as good as the regular pasta that we had. So we found a great company called Farabella, and I have some of their gluten-free crackers, which I'm going to try.
What are they made of? Since they're not made of flour, wheat flour.
Yeah, so it's like a potato, rice, you know, kind of all the things. Some things, you know, obviously for flavor, some things for structure. So yeah, it's been, my dad looked for about 2 years trying to find, you know, the right products.
So let's talk about this first cheese. Okay, so first of all, we're in this, converted shipping container that is our studio. And Andy has brought this whole spread. So we have four cheeses, some honey. I don't know what that is yet. Some olive oil, but let's start with this. Tell us about this cheese, and we're going to taste, and we're sorry you can't taste at home.
But
maybe this will inspire you to go out there and explore the world of cheese.
So this first cheese is actually the oldest cheese that we import. It's aged the longest. It's called Brigantaccio. It's named after brigands, which were outlaws or cowboys, depending on who you ask, I guess, in Abruzzo. So Abruzzo is very mountainous. So especially back in the day, getting around by horseback was kind of obviously the way to go. But they would, borrow, steal food, cheese, things from, farmers, growers, and hide them in caves. So our cousin tells a story of Brigantaccio being a cheese that they would put into a clay pot, put a candle in there, cover it with the skin, buried underground, which would get rid of the oxygen. And then it would just sit underground for as long as, until the next time they were there. So they would, to control the moisture, they would add bran to the inside of the pot. So this cheese is actually covered in bran, and it's been aged without oxygen, so it's basically sealed, and it's an airtight, situation. And over time, all these juices and gases and things are kind of leaving the cheese, and the cheese is just sitting in that for about a year.
Wow.
So afterwards, that was always, my least favorite thing to do was open those bags.
It must smell pretty fun. Huh?
Yeah. Oh, but then you put it into a trough of bran, which kind of, recreates the old way of doing it, but also it helps absorb all that, extra moisture. And so you're just left with like a funky, crumbly cheese, which, 10 years ago, I think everyone's palates are changing. So like, this is like one of the most popular cheeses we have now. When you guys had the fermentation fest, earlier this year, we didn't actually bring enough of that cheese. We were selling it to go, and that was the thing we sold out of fastest.
It is 10 years ago, awesome. That wouldn't have happened. It has like an acidity, and like it's really sharp. It's got a saltiness that's pretty
very interesting.
Very
crumbly.
Now, is this sheep or
very crumbly
sheep?
Dry.
Sorry, yeah.
Now, sheep's milk. Does sheep milk come in like twice, once a year? How does it work with sheep?
Oh, so right now, actual production of making cheese on the farm has been kind of stopped for the last month and will really resume in December. So they, because it was lambing season.
Right.
So, it's a pretty long milking, period. So.
And how long is this typically aged for?
Yeah, so this is aged for about a year.
A year.
Yep.
Okay. Wow.
And what would you pair this with? So one of the fun things, since you worked in beer and other, you're familiar with a lot of other beverages. Let's talk a little bit about pairings as we go along.
Well, this one, this can go one or two ways. Like it can be like, with a nice brown ale. Like I tried it with our friends Kelly and Sonia at Kelso with their nut brown lager. Mm-hmm. That went pretty well recently at the Blocktoberfest. But also like that cheese can kind of stand on its own, with a nice, red wine. But I tend to stick to more like beer and cider type pairings. That's my comfort zone.
Us too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Without a doubt. Yeah. I like how the bubbles scrub through the fat.
I just have no palate for wine. I'm like red, white. That's about it.
Yeah. Well,
those are accurate descriptions.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the capabilities of beer. Especially you can have like a similar, you can have an ingredient that's part of a beer and find a cheese or a food, that has that same ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either, marry things together, or you can have things that, butt up against each other. There's a lot of range there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a little bit more leeway in beer and cheese pairings than there are in wine and cheese pairings too. Yep. Not that wine doesn't go with a lot of things, but with beer and cheese, you got, there's a lot more flexibility. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. On a last, oh my God, what day of the week is it? It's Monday. Saturday night, I went to a cheese, cider, and chocolate pairing up at Rocka Chocolate, and it was just like a wide range of just everything. It was really great.
Nice.
So it's good to know cheese pairings.
So if we can go on to the next thing.
We can go on to the next thing.
We're going to try those gluten-free crackers I was talking about from the Farabella company with... So Orsini is the olive oil producer we work with, and they make all these other wonderful products. So this is a mushroom pesto that has some black truffle in it as well. So I thought that would be appropriate considering it's fall and this is truffle season. So, everyone's favorite chef is now really enjoying the, you know, the truffle harvest.
I'm a huge truffle fan, more so than Mary. Right?
I'm too into truffles. I like truffles, just different than you.
I like lots of truffle, actually. The cracker itself looks like a Ritz cracker style.
It does. Ritz cracker.
Yeah, so we were trying to find something.
I'm trying not to chew into the microphone, sorry.
We were trying to find a cracker, you know, that Farabella made that would be good for cheese. This, you know, this isn't very salty. It's nice and crisp, so it can hold up to pretty much any kind of cheese. So, like, as my dad says, with their gluten-free products are so great, it's like with the pasta, it's like we have this pasta that's really great that happens to be gluten-free, or now we're going to have this cracker that happens to be gluten-free.
That's really
gluten-free.
Yeah, this is a great, solid, gluten-free cracker. Like, most of them, a lot of them will fall apart.
Yep. I wouldn't even guess easily. This was gluten-free. This tastes
like, I mean, definitely, like, solid for cheese holding or tapenade.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
So have you been to Italy during truffle season or gone?
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things a few years ago. So Abruzzo is this wonderful, I don't know, it's like just a pantry of amazing things come from there. So we all know that, you know, truffles come from northern Italy, but they're also growing in Abruzzo too. So a couple years ago, I met a family and, you know, who hunted truffles, and I spent a couple mornings and evenings driving out to where they were, which is about an hour away from where our family is. And because I guess it's like 6 a.m. and 6, it's like sun up, sundown kind of thing. And going out with their dogs and just finding truffles.
And they use dogs to hunt the truffles. Some people use pigs, right?
That's right. And so the gentleman said, he's like, you know, I tried to use pigs, or, you know, other family members have, but you can't tell a pig to stop eating something. So, so a lot of the truffles would be, you know, kind of started on, I guess you'd say. But the dogs, like, the dogs get a treat, you know, when they you know, they stop. So it's pretty amazing. They kind of just make contact with it and then stop. So you don't get, you know, teeth marks.
You don't get some nibbling.
Exactly.
So how many states is Marcelli Formaggi
that's a good question. I'd have to think.
Or are you just simply local?
But so we're based in the New York area. But we ship all over the country.
Okay.
And one thing we've been working really hard on is growing our e-commerce business, because in this, you know, day and age, we're all shopping online. So we have some wonderful retailers and cheese shops that we work with around the country. There's five Eataly's now. Eataly LA opens. This end of this week. So they carry our cheeses, but, it's been great to, you know, grow that business. And so we're getting orders, getting phone calls from people all over the country that are ordering olive wood, cheese, honey, pasta, you know, from us, cause we're the only ones that carry the products that we have.
Yeah. I mean, they're pretty elegant and delicious.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go to the next one.
Cool. So we'll use this as like a nice palate cleanser.
Oh my goodness.
This is an aged aged cow's milk ricotta called Ricotta Passata Rossa. It's got some chives on it.
Oh, okay. And I thought it was blue cheese for a second.
So tell us about aged ricotta, because
generally, ricotta I've had is very young.
Sure.
And like,
well, yeah,
cream,
ricotta
basically.
Is one of those things. It's nice. Obviously, you can, you know, take a good milk and use some, you know, acid or something to help you coagulate. You can make it, in your kitchen at home. And a lot of restaurants will make their own ricotta, but the real traditional way is recooking the whey of what's left over. This ricotta means recooked.
So when you make cheese, you have whey left over when you separate the curds from the whey.
Right.
So, okay.
Right. So, like, this producer makes a Caciocavallo, which is that kind of sort of pear-shaped cheese that's hung and aged. Mm-hmm. It's a stretch curd cheese, same family as, like, mozzarella, the pasta filata family. So this is their aged cow's milk ricotta with some chives. We like it because it's nice and earthy and...
Oh my God, this is
incredible.
Yeah. And it's not very salty. You know, all the cheeses that we have, like, they're only salted as much as they need to be, you know, for aging, and really not so much for flavor. So everything is, like, really clean. And, we have a nice clean Brooklyn lager to wash it down. Because that cheese always reminds me of, like, you know, cream cheese and chives and...
It does, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Brooklyn Lager is nice and malty, so it's kind of like bready.
How common is aged ricotta?
I mean, it's pretty common. You know, we're all, again, used to like the fresh, fluffy ricotta that's used in a lot of food. But
And cow's milk. So what kind of, do you know what kind of cows? These are from a not your family's farm, right?
Right. It's Pezzata Rossa, means red cow. They are like their prize red cow in Italy, used, I think, in a lot of Parmigiano production up north. But yeah, they're pretty amazing, beautiful animals.
Awesome. Okay, so when Andy talks about the farm, so we're friends on Facebook, mm-hmm. and you post, the thing I always think of is the sheep dogs and puppies, and you have farm cats too.
Yep.
So they're working sheep dogs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're extremely intelligent. The breed's called Pastore Abruzzese.
And they're white. They're white, yep, mostly.
Yep, and they have thick fur that kind of mimics wool, so they actually blend in with the sheep very well.
They're super cute as puppies.
Yeah, and so if they're born on the farm, they stay on the farm. They kind of, you know, protect the milking sheep that are there. Because I think, you know, by now, most of them are probably returned from the mountain. But from, I'd say, April till about now, they're in this national park. 1,000 sheep, and then they keep about 300 on the farm for milking, and they rotate them through the transhumans, you know, the kind of herding and moving the animals by foot. So the sheepdogs that are born out there stay there. So it's kind of, they're, you know, they're pretty amazing and really smart animals.
Awesome.
And they're very cute.
Yes.
Wait, you have the sheepdogs are born in this in a national park where there's more sheep and the sheep switch out?
Yeah, so in the summertime, the summer pasture for our family's sheep are in a national park. And so, yeah, the sheep that are out there are the ones who are just eating the 100 different wild herbs and flowers, and then they kind of take 300 and, you know, rotate them with the ones that have been on the farm and been milking. So,
That's very, very cool. Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's not always the same sheep every year.
No.
Different sheep.
Yep.
Cool.
So, you know, and there's a restaurant there, so there's, you know, they're consuming, you know, the animals as well. And, you know, they have a butcher, and people can, you know, order and buy, lambs from them and sheep from them too.
And so Chris and I were just at the New York State Sheep and Wool Festival, and lambs are actually bigger than I thought. Like, when you buy lamb chops, it comes from like 100-pound-plus animal, right?
I think.
Anyway, we watched a sheep being sheared. Yeah. Oh, I did. Chris didn't get to go this year. I'm sorry.
I was there vicariously.
Yes, yeah. You went to York with me last year anyway.
explains the alpaca picture.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, they. So these sheep get sheared twice a year. There's a group of Maori, awesome guys from New Zealand that travel around the world. And they're
shearing sheep? Dude. Okay.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But it makes a lot of sense after what I learned at the Sheep and Wolf
Fest. They can do it in like, it's like a minute and 40 seconds.
Yeah, that's incredible. The guy that I was watching, that we watched, I think he does like 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. But basically you can't, I guess they do have these like $1 million, $3 million, very, very expensive robot sheep shearers, but they can't even do the full body. They can do everything, but somebody still has to hand shear the stomach. Mm-hmm. But sheep shearing is a true art.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's great. So they, you know, they take those, you know, the wool, and it's clean, and, you know, they have a company that they work with that makes, like, kind of hiking socks and blankets and sweaters and all sorts of fun stuff. So
that's awesome.
You know, so it's, yeah, the warmest blankets you've ever had.
That's so nice, dude.
Yeah. All right, what's the next cheese?
All right.
Now I'm just like, thinking about knitting. And
oh yeah, my mom got me this scarf from the Scottish Highlands. It's actually wool.
So next we're going to try a really interesting cheese.
Oh, it's on Ganesh.
It's called Pecorino Gregoriano. It's actually named after Gregorio, who is the owner of his farm in the village of Scano. It's about 45 minutes or so away from our family's village. And he's also got about the same amount of sheep, same breed of sheep, but it's a higher elevation. It's a few thousand feet higher, actually. So it's this one here. So it's a soft Pecorino, which is very unique. Because obviously Pecorinos are typically a little bit firmer. This is made by not pressing out, you know, all the excess moisture when it's made. So it starts out being like this, you know, they fill a basket with the curd, basically. And then also we have this wonderful sunflower honey, which goes very nicely with it as well.
This cheese is very strong.
Sunflower honey. The sunflower honey is from where?
It's also from Abruzzo. Yeah, so it's beautiful, like orangey gold color. And the family that we work with that produces the honey, they just move their hives around to different parts of Abruzzo where different things are growing. So Luca, who's the father and the main guy that works with the bees, he takes the hives to a field of sunflowers, and the bees do their job, and they have this beautiful honey.
Mm. Then they collect that layer, and it becomes sunflower honey. Okay, so wait, this is a Pecorino.
Yep. Yeah, so it's unique because they haven't pressed out all the extra moisture. They put the curds into the basket, cutting them into larger pieces as opposed to smaller for the more traditional harder cheeses. And they're just letting it it just shrinks and collapses upon itself. Because
so they're not necessarily
weighing it down or anything. No, it's just kind of, gravity or its own weight. So, you obviously we're on radio, you can't see, but the final wheel is about an inch high, where it started out being, probably 8 inches of curd. So it's really creamy.
And you said this is also sheep, the same kind as your family has.
Yep.
Cool. This is really good. It's pretty funky, I would say.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And with the cider, it's
So this is, so I was grabbing things I had at my house. So this is made by my friends at Citizen Cider. This is their brosé.
Nice.
So it's a blueberry cider, and that cheese, it's good with, fruit. So I thought that'd be a fun accompaniment.
It is.
It's a good pairing.
Pretty damn delicious.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. Funky, slightly creamy cheese and blueberry and cider.
Brosé.
Yeah.
Brosé.
This is fun. I don't know if I've had this cider before.
Yeah.
We just ended Cider Week here in New York City.
Exactly, I also thought it'd be appropriate.
Yep.
Chris and I did not get to go anything. Sounds like Rachel did.
I did. I went to, Heritage had a lovely event called the Old Adventures of Newtown Pippin. And we basically tried different ciders and apples of Newtown Pippin apples from various farms in New York, in California, a couple in Virginia, one in New Zealand, and then a few in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon area. And all of them were vastly different. It was really interesting.
That would have been cool to go to.
Have a taste. Yeah, there's only so many breeds of apples that you can do that with, but not to go on about apples for too long.
Cool. So you have time for
one more cheese?
Awesome.
Our final round.
Cool.
We insist, actually.
What is the final round? Oh, there's...
That makes a good sound.
Yeah.
My brosé.
So this cheese is called Cacio Fiorello. I also thought this would be appropriate to bring because this is a sheep's milk cheese that has goat yogurt added to it.
Ooh.
The cheesemaker is actually from Romania, and this is something that's more traditional to Romania than Italy. And then this cider, actually it's a sizer. And before I got this when I worked at Italy, so it's about probably 2 years old by now. It's a combination of like honey wine and apples,
It's like a mead cider hybrid.
Exactly.
Apricot.
Exactly. So it's got, I think the yeast comes from contact with apricot skins. It's also, it was dry hopped. But again, it's been aged. It's from the first batch of, that product from Millstone in Maryland.
Cheese looks and probably
was
like
made.
Cheesecake.
We were talking before. It probably was made by Kyle, who's now at Graft, who we had on the show earlier this year.
Yep. So I thought also because this is got a little bit more funkiness and kind of tartness to it, and so does that cheese.
Oh yeah. This is okay. So this is sheep's
milk. I love
milk
the texture of this
with goat's milk yogurt added.
Right.
So the goat's milk yogurt, it's made. So the goat's milk made into yogurt first, and then
added. Added to the cheese when they're making it. So it's probably about 90% sheep's milk and about 10% goat yogurt.
Like as the starter, or as
I don't think I've ever
in
had
addition
like
to
this.
It.
In addition.
Mm.
So this is, I would say, I'm trying to describe this. This is super unusual and really delicious. So it's
kind
very
of like if you solidified yogurt.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's like creamy in as texture, but it's actually quite dry and quite tart.
Yep.
But super fun.
Yeah, it's got a very smooth texture, and actually, I find it has kind of a mild taste, like a lighter cheese.
It has the ping of
it's got a ting
of skier.
It's definitely got a
tang. Agree, I would agree.
It's like a more solid skier.
Pretty fun with this cider too.
Yep.
Yep.
I imagine that's what it'd be if you just kind of what do you call it, filtered your yogurt to death like 7 or 8 times until it just became like solid.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, this cheese,
the yogurt cheese.
Yeah, it's nice. I always think of it as like a breakfast cheese because of the yogurt component. Mm-hmm. So it's something you can just eat on its own or, you know, with some honey.
That would go great on toast with honey, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what are some of your other kind of, like, let's just talk about general cheese, beer, and cider pairing mentality.
Sure.
Or some of your other favorite pairings.
Okay. Yeah. Let me think. I mean, there's the classics like Stichelton, you know, a nice blue cheese with a stout. We've actually, a couple years ago in a kind of a staff class at Eataly, we had some fun pairing I think it was a 3-year-aged Italian blue cheese with Dogfish Head 120-minute, you know, 18% triple IPA. So that's what's fun is, like, there's some things you can just kind of try and you find something that, you know, you didn't know would work.
So that's kind of like strong meets strong.
Exactly. That was like...
So that one doesn't roll over the other, no, but they're not really clashing.
Like those two things on their own kind of made your mouth, like, tingle and numb. Then, you know, there's the classics, obviously, like, you know, more hoppy beers with, like, nice, you know, cheddars and things like that. So, yeah, and then, I don't know, cider, you know, I think, again, because cider has, just like beer, you know, you got your sour beers, but cider, you know, has your funky and dryness. You can kind of match it, you know, to the same notes, you know, of a cheese.
But also, I feel like, so this one that we're drinking, this Hoppercut Sizer, it is a little funky. There's a teeny bit of acetic in there. And it is a really nice contrast to the creaminess and tart, you know, it kind of matches with the tartness of this cheese, but it's also a good, like, balance to the creaminess, kind of like a palate cleanser between tastes.
Exactly.
I've been kind of silent ever since that Brooklyn Lager pairing, because I mean, that was a beer that I really got into like 17 years ago, kind of when I was first starting to homebrew. And, you know, I get...
He's going to start crying.
I am, maybe. Oh, no. No, but, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're brewing now, it's and okay, we're like, things are moving so fast. Things are moving so fast, and you're always looking for the newest beer and other stuff, and you forget about the golden classics that kind of made, like, you fall in love with beer. And Brooklyn Lager is one of those for me. And that pairing with that aged ricotta, it brought out the beauty in that beer again for me. And I just, man, I'm in love all over again with the Brooklyn Lager, I gotta say. I don't know how fresh that can is, but it tasted damn fresh and it was beautiful. Yep. And the way it brought out that maltiness and just that clean, it's just a beautiful, beautiful beer. And thank you for the cheese. Thanks, and reminding me of who I was once. And I'm going back.
Yep, absolutely. No, and that's, you know, that's been awesome. Fun because, like, obviously our products are from... you know, or from Italy. So, you know, sometimes we'll, you know, pair, like, I love Italian beer, but it's been really fun to, you know, take our kind of uniquely flavored cheeses and pair them with some, you know, either locally made beers or, you know, like you said, Brooklyn Lager being a classic. Now it's, you know, now it's classic for this a tried and true classic.
Yeah, it's international now.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we have to get to this olive oil.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's made like a couple
of
weeks.
Olive oil is one of those things, like, I'll be honest, Chris and I have not been cooking at all because this brewery has consumed our lives. We just mostly eat takeout now.
Cook with this olive oil. This oil is special.
But I mean, we're not even eating it. Like, if we're eating it at home, it's like on the counter or it's like in the car on the way home. Yeah. But, and olive oil is something that I want to do a tasting class. And I know they're out there, especially there's a place in New York City that does them. I think there's a few places. But I feel actually insufficient when it comes to, like, knowing anything about olive oil. So I'm very excited about this. And is also very excited. So tell us why you're excited, Andy.
Well, I'm excited because this is the Olio Fresco from Orsini. That was, like, at this point, it was pressed and bottled 2 weeks ago. So it's very, very, very grassy. It
smells like fresh cut grass.
Can you tell us what it means to be virgin, extra virgin, and regular olive oil?
I think usually extra virgin means, like, you know, the first pressing.
Press.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like any, you know, good olive oil should just be in its nature, you know, extra virgin or first press, but,
It smells like wheatgrass, right?
It smells like grass clippings, which is a great thing.
So a month ago, my sister and I were, you know, with our friend Camillo, who's the export manager for Orsini, because, you know, we started working with them about 3 years ago, and we brought in some Olio Fresco, not really understanding... You know, we were surprised at the feedback. We didn't understand that it was kind of like such a big deal. So it's something that we look forward to every year now. And, you know, we were very successful with it last year. And this year so far, selling it on our own site and also getting it in the hands of chefs as fast as possible. We were there with him, like by the seaside on the Adriatic, checking out the olives. And he said, "Well, these need some rain in about 2 more weeks," and that's exactly what it took. And then they were ready. So it's a blend of 3 olives, the Gentile di Chieti, which is kind of the local olive of that part of Abruzzo, and then Cuco olives and Lencino, which is a black olive. So, yeah, it's they're all mixed together. The farmers just kind of bring them all to the mill. And they start, milling the olives, and it's not filtered. So that's the other reason why this oil is special.
So this is amazing. I've never had anything like this. Yeah. Is kind of like a life-changing olive oil.
This is like, whoa. Well, so what's,
that has like a taste to it.
Yeah. But what's interesting is that, it's kind of like where, brewers will now want to do like wet hop, IPAs or whatever, mm-hmm. with hops that have been only, picked and processed like days before. It's kind of the same thing. So it's harvest season, so grapes, olives, hops, everything's kind of fresh. Ready now. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we get to look forward to every year and celebrate. And we've been shipping bottles now for this is the third year, all over the country. Some people are buying 10-12 bottles for themselves, for gifts. And it's just, it's a simple, wonderful olive oil that just has a lot of flavor.
Yeah.
And, so now we're, I'm just putting on everything, soup, salad, pasta, just a little
just
bit.
Just eating it with fresh bread.
Yeah, exactly. Like. And that's one of the classic things is, you can just do fresh bread, and this this olive oil with a good bread. So. Yeah.
And I used to be a singer, and before, like, a concert, you would drink, a spoonful of olive oil, and everyone was always kind of squeamish about it. But like for this, you would not be squeamish. Just drink it.
So you said you do all online sales,
mm-hmm.
and so where? What's the online?
So our website is Marcelli Formaggi.
How do you spell that?
M A R C E L L I F O R M A G G I. Formaggi is the Italian word for cheese, and that's why we named our company, Marcelli Formaggi, because the Marcellis in Italy were, the ones we started to work with, and their cheese. But you'll find everything that we carry on that website.
Fantastic. .com.
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 All right. Marcelli, is there anywhere else on social media we can find you?
We're on Instagram, Marcelli Formaggi, as well as Facebook. But I'd say we're probably the most active on Instagram.
Cool. And you guys do some events, I know, around New York City.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, we always like to be part of beer events. It's been really fun to
you to Fifth Hammer.
Stay tuned, for a beer pairing at Fifth Hammer. Let's book that within the next month. Absolutely.
Well, that's what's been really fun is I know the New York City beer community very well, and it's been really fun to work with work with everyone with our cheeses.
Yeah, awesome. Well, hopefully you have been inspired to out there listening to explore cheese more, and particularly check out Marcelli Formaggi. This cheese is delicious. I tasted it, although I feel like whenever I see you at a festival, I'm always like running around like a chicken with a head cut off.
But I was trying to get you to try it.
Yes, but this is great. And that olive oil is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. MarcelliFormaggi.com. Thanks for listening to Ferment About It. Thank you, Andy, for
Thanks
joining
for
us.
Me.
We're so, so happy to have you here. And I can't wait to do a pairing with you at Fifth Hammer. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Next week. On Ferment About It.
Ferment About It.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.